Hey everybody, welcome to the 44th episode of the JDO Show. I am your host, J. David Osborne, and today on the show, we have Adam Caesar. He referred to himself in this episode as Adam Caesar, but I've heard him say that it was Adam Cesare. So I don't know what to believe anymore. Up is down, white is black, a dog is actually a cat. No, I wouldn't go that far. Anyhow, Adam is a very talented writer. He has put out a lot of books in the past few years. The Summer Job is a good one. Tribesmen, Video Night, Zero Lives Remaining, I enjoyed. And his most recent is called The Con Season, which I edited for him. Which, by the way, motherfucker, I do editing stuff on the side. So if you want your book edited into something as beautiful and immaculate as Adam Caesar's, the Con Season, then holler at your boy. I can make it happen. I can do that. I'm good at it. Turns out I'm actually good. Turns out books that I work on actually do pretty well. So, we talk about all kinds of cool stuff. I know that's a very exciting teaser, but Adam is just a really cool guy. He's a really smart guy, and as is wont with the JDO show, this kind of stuff, it swerves from topic to topic, and I think you'll like it. I think you'll enjoy what we have in store for you. Holler at me. Friend me on Facebook. Be my friend on Facebook. Fucking, follow me on Twitter. All that shit. Like me on Instagram. All that shit. What else is there? Twitch? I don't do video games. I don't know. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this interview with Adam Caesar. And I hope that your life is going fucking sweet. You have your headphones in?
No, I don't. Do I? Should I?
Yes, please.
All right, let me go get him.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
I have to go into the other room because I'm hiding from my dog.
Okay.
No. 1 second, they're tangled.
That's okay.
How have you been, man? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Oh, I've been pretty good, dude. I've just started this new gig, and, so it's been pretty cool. Before I was doing that, I was pretty much on my own, and I had just, I realized this about myself is that if I don't have any kind of structure imposed on me by the man, quote unquote, I fall to pieces. So I kind of always need that.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
1 second. I'm plugging them in right now.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. So I'm going to go ahead and press record here.
All right, there's no what do I do?
We just talk. So, hey Adam, thanks for being on the podcast.
Hey David, nice to see you.
Yeah, I see your initials at least, so that works out. So you said that you're hiding from your dog. What is your dog trying to get you to do?
Oh well, he's like kind of a new dog. I mean, he's old, but he's new to us. We just adopted him, but he with my girlfriend, he's like completely sweet and just like will very, very quiet during the day and like lay his head on her lap. But for me, like he gets really, really excited to see me and he'll bark if he sees me sitting down to eat or if he sees me sitting. So I'm like far away from him and I have the door closed, but I'm also far away from the router. So like the internet may not be so good here, but.
Oh, okay. Well, so far so good. So he's basically, man, it's like I live in a studio apartment. So my dog is kind of like, very similar, right? Like she knows that she can manipulate me. She can't manipulate Rios, right? Like Rios will just ignore her if she's being annoying, but with me she'll lay on her back and like wiggle around on the floor and make noise and stare at me until I do whatever it is she wants me to do. So I'm the one that's easily manipulated out of the two parents, I guess.
I get it. And it's like, I don't even really know what he wants me to do. And I don't even think he knows. He just, he just wants some kind of attention, but he's an older guy, so he doesn't really like wrestle. And like, he'll run away from me when I try to pet him when he's in that mood.
Right.
So he's just like, he just doesn't want me to rest. He doesn't want me to be doing whatever I'm doing on the computer.
Is he a herding dog?
He's like a mix of all things, but he'll do things like, I used to have an Australian cattle dog, and he does things like she did, like where we'll sit down on the couch and then he'll circle the couch 5 times before he like lays down. Cause he's just making sure we're in one place.
Right. No, that's what Kalu is, an Australian cattle dog also. And so, yeah, she's annoying, but I love her.
I mean, I like her too. I've never met her, but as with most people on Facebook, if like you have like a cute dog, you're like much less likely to like, I mean, for me to silence you, I feel like, you know what I mean? It's like, does that make sense? I don't know.
No, it does.
Not that I would silence you, cause I like the things you say, but like, I feel like I'll give more leeway.
Sure.
To like, well, that guy, but.
Oh dude, man.
He's got a dachshund, so.
Right. No, yeah. That actually reminds me, man. I've been silencing the fuck out of people on Facebook recently. Cause it's one of those things where.
Why? What's happened recently?
Oh, well, I mean, just with the whole political situation.
I'm kidding.
Oh, right. I walked right into that one. I'm fucking dumbass. No, man, it's like the way that I see it is that.
You there?
Like, oh, yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Shit, sorry, you cut out for a second. I think it's my email or my internet, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But yeah, no, the thing is that the thing that I see the most is this idea that, you know, you have to be engaged and you have to know what's going on. And I agree with that to a certain extent, but I also definitely agree with like cultivating a time and place to absorb that information. And so the fact is that like I have to leave Facebook open for most of the day because that's how I talk to people basically. But at the same time, like I can't have that feed open and just see this fucking Marquis de Sade, 120 Days of Sodom list of fucking horrors that's going on. You know, like it's not helpful. It puts you in a bad. You can't act if you feel like, you know, you're being sucker punched every time you scroll down your newsfeed. So, with all due respect to people who, because you know they're trying to do something and everybody feels kind of powerless. So I don't hold that against people necessarily. It's just not helpful. To me personally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like no offense, but I'm going to go off in my corner and do my thing.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. I consider myself like pretty liberal and I don't really silence people who are like, not to like create the echo chamber going, but it's like, if someone's just, you know, if someone seems like they're trolling or if it's like, from my viewpoint, it's like, you've got to be kidding because you can't really think that I'll hit the button instead of like making it a thing. I'm not gonna like unfriend you, but I'll just like I'd rather not deal with that. Like, this is my, because I don't keep Facebook up all day, but I like, you know, I'll come home and I'll be like, oh, what's a leisure time activity that I could leave, you know, a window open, and like I'm friends with people that I generally like hearing their opinions and, you know, talking to them, even if I'm not like, because I'm not like the most active commenter. But I like toss likes around willy-nilly. Like I'm like a really good like dude in the corner just listening, which is not like me, you know, at all when I'm actually in a room with people because I'm just a loudmouth. But I like I don't know. It's just like it becomes like a job. I don't want to have to like follow up on threads and stuff. Like,
oh yeah, no,
and I don't want to.
I 100% agree.
I feel
man.
Like I've watched people. Yeah. I feel like I watch people have like mental breakdowns, and it's like I like, you know. If you watch the news, you get enough of a mental breakdown. I don't need to, not in my like leisure time. Like,
right. Yeah, no, it's all about balance. And I think
not that I'm not engaged and I can't like, I can't be like accused of like not going, knowing what's going on. Like I do, I just don't need to feel the need to project that I know what's going on. Like,
sure. And I think the thing is too, that like, I think that, I don't know. I mean, I stopped arguing on the internet a long time ago. So the fact that people actually want to get into discussions on Facebook still baffles and mystifies me, because it's like, what's the fucking point? Like, there is no fucking point. Nobody's going to leave those.
You're not going to win.
No, you're not going to win. So, I mean, the thing that that I do is that, I mean, I'm sure you get this a lot too, where, you know, you get added by a bunch of people who essentially just want to make, like, add as many writer Facebook friends as they possibly can. And, you know, you don't have anything even remotely close to what they do. But it's always those people who will come into my threads whenever I do express an opinion and just do a really contrarian, like, one or two sentences. And now what I do with those is I just delete those comments because I know that it infuriates them. And my whole thing is that, like, since you didn't put in the time and effort to talk to me like an adult and try to have a discussion with me, since you just basically took 30 seconds to just try to piss me off, I'm going to ruin those 30 seconds for you too. Like, those 30 seconds were a waste of your time because nobody's going to see it. But yeah, no, dude, I just, I
oh, really... you're silencing them. That's, you know, that's what they did in Nazi Germany.
I'm
kidding.
It's true. Oh man. Oh yeah.
But it's not a free, you know, it's not a freedom of speech thing. It's like, no, this is my place. You don't get to, you know,
right.
I have that silence button for a reason.
Like, yeah. It's like, I always compare it to a party, man. And it's like, if I have a party and I invite somebody over and we're all having a good time, we're having some drinks, and then one person is like, let me tell you what's wrong with black people, I'm gonna be like, no, dude, you can go, you can leave, right?
Yeah, like, you'd like, yeah, that's at the very, you know, that's at the very nicest you're gonna do, like, if someone's coming into your house, like,
well, I'm not gonna be like, what do you mean, what's wrong with black people, I happen to like that, you know,
engage in a dialogue in my party.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I mean, I think that I think people are getting overall better, though. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. You know what, though? It's entirely possible that I've just unfollowed so many people that I don't see the bullshit anymore. But it feels like it's better, at least. It's just this whole Trump thing.
You
is
gotta
just
curate your
people nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm off of work tomorrow because of it. But
wait, really? Why?
Yeah, I mean, he's coming to Philly, and I work at a school.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's right near where he's going to be visiting, so they're shutting down, like, the streets and stuff. So,
oh, that's pretty badass.
I mean, I could get into work very easily, but a lot of people travel. You know, they drive in, they take the train, they take the bus. So, we just got, it's like a snow day.
Right. What's he doing, Donald in Philly? Trump.
I don't know. I think he's talking to like some kind of Republican convention, or I don't know. He's right around City Hall. I don't actually know where he's going to be, but he's like 13th and Market is going to be closed. So
he's just opening his garbage. I just picture two trash cans, and one of the trash cans has a really bad haircut, and you just empty that trash can, and it's full of like old spaghetti and dog shit, and you just empty that trash can into another trash can, and that's pretty much what it sounds like he's doing.
You should give people your Twitter handle so they can tell you what they think of it.
A bunch of fucking eggs and Pepe the Frogs. Like,
oh, yeah.
Well, actually, it's like, actually, we're not Nazis. We just think that races shouldn't mix. There's a difference.
Oh, let me explain my pin.
Oh, dude, that was so wonderful. I love that.
It almost feels fake because he started explaining the pin, and it was like the perfect... The timing was perfect.
He stopped. He said, it's become a symbol of, and then he got punched. Like, you could not ask for a more poetically perfect time for that punch to land. Like, it was so good. So fucking good. No, actually,
I don't know. I'm neutral, man. I don't have any. I don't how to hold any political opinion. So talking about.
So how is the, how's the con season doing, man?
Pretty good. I mean, like, really good, like, better than all my other books, which is nice.
Do you want to kind of, like,
I don't know, and
give
I think
a sort of summary about, like what that's about for the listeners?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I've listened to this show before. It's not like a pimp pig show, but, it's a novel that I wrote and it's the first novel that I self-published, that I released myself under my own label, and I had you do the editing because we'd worked together before on a couple other things, and it's the idea is basically like Scream meets Robert Altman's The Player, where it's like B movie and below celebrities get abducted and they think they're going to a fan convention, a new fan convention, but they're actually going to be like killed off in a kind of Big Brother style slasher movie. So yeah, it's doing really well, and I'm not sure if I like lucked into it doing well because or if it's just doing well because I'm like playing ball with Amazon or if people just really like the cover. I'm not sure. I like have no vector of why it's doing so well, but I'm very happy that it is, and I'm happy that people are liking it. I mean, for the most part,
it's probably like a bunch of different things, right? I mean, it's probably the cover is good. You know, it's got a good concept. And it also seems like, I don't know, I feel like after you write a certain amount of books, like I think people just start buying them, you know? I mean, it's like they have to look, and then if they click over to see how many books you have and you have like five or six, they're like, oh, okay, right on. And like, for some reason, I feel like, and I mean, this is, I'm not like diminishing the fact that you're a good writer, because you are, but you see what I'm saying, right? It's like, it's almost like proof of.
No, I do. Like, I'm wondering, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's any, you know, better or worse than any of my other books. And I think I have a couple that are better, but they don't, you know, they don't sell as well. And I don't know why, you know, like, right, and that makes, that's as good a reason as any, like.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it's like you have somebody like Stephen Graham Jones, and it's just like, you know, at a certain point, you know, he was so consistent and his books were so like diverse and, you know, but consistently good. And they all had that same like voice to them that I think eventually, you know, I mean, he cranked out, what was it? Fucking like 20 books before Mongrels, like Mongrels 21, I think.
It's probably more than that. I think it's, is it 21? I would figure, at least with the collections and stuff, it's more just because he's so prolific. That's and just true. With the things he gets published in, like if you clicked on his Amazon page, like if you look at all those like Ellen Datlow anthologies, it's probably like, you know, 50 plus.
That's true.
Individual books. But also, I think he's a slightly different case because I don't know. I don't know what your feelings on him are, but I'm a real fanboy, and I think he's just like a legitimate like. I just don't know how someone could be that prolific and that good and that insightful. Like, it seems like a real like case of someone being like a genius or something like that. You know, some kind of like savant. Like,
I think so. I think so.
So like, he's a little different. Yeah.
I think so, but I think when you because I'm also a super fanboy, so I think I've probably read most of his books, most of his like articles, and various, you know, offshoot type, you know, critiques and things like that. And the thing that you get from him is that I think that he has just sort of trained himself to be this conduit, right? Like, because it seems like he's one of the few people I know who looks forward to writing. You know what I mean? Like, he'll talk about how he'll be like, oh, I haven't written in you know, a day. And he's like, and my hand will start to shake or something, you know, like, so he's actually, I think he made himself like addicted to writing, essentially.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a huge part of it. Cause like I only went to BizarroCon that one time, but we were at BizarroCon and like, you know, he comes down and his hair's wet and he's like, I just wrote a short story. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's at the convention, but he just went to his room and he's just like, you know, and it's probably a great story. It's probably a story I love. And then he went like for like a dip in that pool thing. Like, it's like a very, he can turn it off and on. Like, oh, I have an idea. And then like, you know, be at the pool and then go write a story and then come back down and be like, so what did I miss? Kind of like, and I think a lot of us are more precious about it. And I'm somewhere in the middle where I feel like I'm not like, you know, the muse has to speak to me kind of person, but I'm not, no one is at his level like of like that idea of, you know, I get enthusiastic about things, but I also like, sometimes it's work to get me going. And I don't think it's work for him. Like,
right. And I also think that he does something that I've been trying to figure out where he seems so comfortable with his voice, because I don't know if you've noticed this in his books, but he has I'm sure somebody's done a better analysis on this than I'm about to do, but it does seem like he has a very particular way of writing sentences that's very much unlike other writers, to the point where sometimes you have to read the sentences twice.
Oh, sure.
You know, but I think that he's there's this weird line, right, between like being confident in having that kind of style and, you know, being sloppy, and he somehow has found like that balance, right?
Yeah, it's not shtick with him. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, clearly, like, you couldn't really parody it because you're not as good as he is at it.
Right.
You know, like, there's a fine line, because there's a lot of writers that have, like, a very distinctive voice, but it's almost grating. but I can read a bunch of his stories and books in a row and it not be grating. It's just I get better at reading it. And like there's kind of like jokes that kind of exist in like ellipses that kind of you get better or land better when you've read more of him than not, if that makes sense.
Now, have you read like All the Beautiful Sinners and Demon Theory and all those early books?
Oh yeah. I love Demon Theory. I mean, for obvious reasons, because it's like an annotated adaptation of three screenplays, like where the footnotes are like are important, but also just like a chance for him to stretch his like slasher movie muscles.
And I
think I like later books better, but I still love that book because it was like partly a gateway drug. And I think what's funny about that book is that I was talking to a guy, and I guess I won't name him because it's like it's almost like a slam, but he was like, oh, I had to review that for like and it like X magazine. I really didn't like it. And I think that was the first book I read by him because the way he explained it to me, he's like, I really didn't like it. And then he explained it and I was like, I'm gonna get that book. It was either that or it came from Del Rio was the first. And
Yeah, that's fucking awesome, dude. It's so funny how that works sometimes. It's like, dude, I just read this book. It was fucking terrible. It's like this guy floating through space and he's in cryogenic freezing and then he like comes out of it and he communes with like these tentacle beings. It fucking and I would be like, okay, cool. I'm gonna buy that. That sounds
cool. Yeah, I'm down. Yeah.
Yeah. But so with cons and stuff, like I feel like you go to a bunch of them. I feel like you're always like packing up your shit and going out to these cons, right?
I get really antsy when I haven't gone to one. And I like it. I used to love, I don't know, for, you know, first, you know, since I was like, you know, 11 or 12, like I loved going to cons. And now that I can sell books at cons, I like it even better. Mm-hmm. And I just, I don't know. I get really like, I had to go looking for one, like just during this, cause this new job is like really like taking a lot of time away and just like, I'm just exhausted when I get home. So I just searched like conventions in New England and we found one for like later this month. I'm going to go up to Rhode Island and like, I'm going to sell books, but I just like, I need to do it. I don't know what it is about it. And it's like completely exhausting and completely work because I'm just, people make fun of me at like people who have other tables like are like, oh, there's Adam with the hard sell. But it's not really like hard sell. Like I just point at people and I'm like, I like your shirt. And then I just like start talking to them. And it's a little bit like used car salesman, but also like, and this is going to sound, I'm going to sound like a real dickhead, but like, but like I sell more books than the people that are making fun of me for doing the hard sell. And it's like, I came here for a reason and I came here to meet people and I came here to talk to people. I'm going to do that the entire time I'm there. Like, I'm here to work
here.
And have fun.
Yeah, so what I'm kind of getting here is that, like, you have that – there's something in because I noticed this when I was at AWP. I shared a table with Ross Lockhart, and that dude is, like – he's also just a kind of a born salesman. Like, he was the guy who was out in the sea of people like a carnival barker, right? Like, hey, what kind of books do you like? And then they're like,
I knew I liked Ross. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I'm standing there behind the table with Cameron, and we're both just like watching him bring. You know, we owe him a lot of our sales, I think, from that particular AWP because he would get people in, and then you know they'd pick up a Word Horde book, but they'd also pick up like a Lazy Fascist or a Broken River book. So, there are some people who now do you get. I mean, obviously you don't get shy, right? But was this something that you, like, was that like a muscle that you had to work out? Or were you just a natural kind of from day one?
It's a little bit of both. Cause like, I think the thing is I usually do it with my buddies. Like I usually have like either Matt Serafini or Scott Cole there. And I feel a lot more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I'm a person who like knows how to talk to people. Like I'm not, you know, those people that are actually social and they call themselves introverts. Yeah. Like I hate that of like, oh, I'm such an introvert. And it's like, no, you're fucking not. Like you're like fine with talking to people.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm not going to like label myself as an introvert, but I get like there's times I can get in my head and like get real shy, like if I psych myself out. So like I feel like having, you know, my friends there, like, or Pat Lacey, like I feel like having someone, you know, and you guys are all West Coast, because I'd love to like sell books for you guys, but you know, it's like a two plane train ride or plane ride. So
yeah,
but I don't get in my, like, if I can not get in my head and I can get in that mode where I'm just like, you know, I have patter and I have like a line that gets people at the table. It's like, what kind of heart are you like, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of different diverse stuff on the table, so I can be like, oh, you like zombies. And I don't really have any zombie books, but I try to sell them video night, 'cause I'm like, this one's kind of like zombies.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, I don't know. I have patter for everything. And I know my, like, I know my genre very well. And I know the movie side of the genre. So like, I can talk to people about movies and I can, you know, relate my books to movies, and I could just have like, you know, kind of human fan conversations with people, but also be trying to sell them something. Like, I don't feel sleazy about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I'm, you know.
Well, I mean, that's so big too, is the connection between movies and books, which I think that a lot of people, I think, have problems at AWP. Well, AWP in general is a shitty fucking place to sell books, because it's other...
Well, it's not built for that. Like,
right, exactly. There's a book fair, but, and I mean, the first time I went, they opened it up to the public for free on Saturdays, which was fantastic. And then they started fucking charging for it, which was dumber than dog shit. And so basically you don't really get anybody who's super interested in buying. I mean, I'm being a little, yeah. I mean,
it's industry people, like,
yeah, exactly. But like, so what do you do? Like, basically, do you back off if you can tell that somebody really doesn't want to talk to you, or do you push?
Not if they don't want to talk to me, but if they're not interested.
Yeah.
And a lot of the cons I go to, I go to like fan conventions. I don't go to like writer conventions to try to sell other writers my books. Mm-hmm. I go to Rocket Shock in Worcester, Massachusetts every year. I go to Scares That Care in Virginia, which is kind of new, but it's like a fantastic convention because it's also a charity. So mm-hmm. like people are just generally cooler and in a better mood there.
Right.
I do a bunch. I do some smaller like sci-fi cons and stuff around Philly, but I can tell when people are not going to, like, they're not readers, and people will sometimes be very unabashedly like, "Oh, sorry, but I don't read."
Yeah.
Or like they'll point to their wife or point to their boyfriend and be like, "Oh, he or she's the one that reads," and that's the one that I'm just like, I'll kind of be like, "All right, if you don't read, you know, I don't know." As Don Draper said, you know, I'm not going to stand here and tell you about Jesus. Either he lives in your heart or he doesn't. Like, you know, idea of like, you know, like if you are maybe considering picking up a book, I will hard sell you. Especially if you're like, I sell to a lot of kids too at cons. Like, I sell to a lot of like high school kids.
Sure.
Which is like my favorite. It's like my favorite demographic to talk to, because I'm like, I'm a teacher and like I get to like, I like rarely get to talk to kids as Adam Caesar, you know, not as like Mr. Whoever. Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I love that idea. And like, I've had kids, like I had a kid slash Rocket Shock that she had bought Tribesmen, and she was a high school senior.
Yeah.
And she said she almost got kicked out of her school for reading it in study hall. And then she was like, "Well, I'm not going to bring Jackpot." That was like, it like made me so happy. I was like, "Here, you got to tell Matt the story." And I was like, "You got to tell him like what you just told me." I don't know. I needed like a witness. I was like,
that's,
this is the
fucking
best
cool
thing.
Man, that's,
I almost
that's
got
awesome.
This kid kicked out of school.
Like, that's so fucking metal, dude. Like, that's I mean, you're basically like you're freaking out the olds, essentially.
I mean, not really, because like I don't know, I got plenty of olds, but I love the idea that like that,
well, olds,
that she
olds
like almost
a,
had a footloose moment in her study hall, you know.
Olds is a state of mind, my friend. I don't mean chronologically
I guess
old.
That's true.
Stodgy.
It's a state of mind, and it's a physical being. Yeah, stodgy. Yeah. Right. No, yeah, the John Lithgows of the world we got, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, so that's awesome. It's really cool to hear, because, you know, there are so many people who want to figure out, like, how to – I'm very, very focused right now. You know, of course, I got this new job and everything, which is great, because I'll actually have money to do things and stuff.
Can you say what it is on the air?
I'd just rather know. I mean, some people know.
Never mind. Yeah.
I mean, some people know what it is that I do, but I mean, it's just, it's kind of, it's, I've actually gotten to that kind of lame space where I don't want to mix the two. You know, I don't want to be like, oh, this
Oh
one.
yeah, no, believe me, I completely understand.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to make it weird.
I will say though that it's super, super cool. I work with really, really great people. I mean, I can take off pretty much whenever they want, and I'm able to, like, they've literally told me, like, you know, you can write for most of this just as long as you do a few simple tasks. And so, you know, it's pretty cool. Like, it's a neat company.
That's
But
fantastic.
yeah, so anyways, I'll have a little bit of money, and I'm just really, really interested in, there's this kind of split that I see where people think that, you know, you have to go this certain route in order to be a working writer. And I'm
You're
inter-
breaking up.
Oh shit. How about now? Can you hear me now? And we're
Did I ruin the
back. No, that's how it's so fun. When I was interviewing Benjamin Whitmer, it started like cutting out every like 5 minutes. And he was super patient. He's like, yeah, we can just keep doing it this way, man. I don't care. So we were getting it like 5 minutes at a time. But anyway, I guess the kind of point that I was making is that I'm really fascinated with the idea of, you know, pounding pavement and really kind of putting in work to become a sort of almost blue collar or maybe middle class writer, right? Where you don't have to be one of two. You don't have to be struggling and starving, and you also don't have to be, you know, on a major press getting paid $1 million to write a book every 5 years, you know?
Yeah, I'd take that though. I mean,
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course, yeah. I just think that like what most people don't get about that is that if you're going to be the writer who is getting paid $1 million to write a book every 5 years, I mean, that's mostly luck and connections, right? And coming up in a certain, you know, it's being friends with people who have influence, right? And if you don't make the right friends, I mean, you have to, you've got to, you can't just not do anything. You can't wait to make the right friend, basically. So anyway, so yeah, so that I guess there's no real question there.
No, I understand what you're saying. Like, I take a very, like, I don't know. I take a very, like, gospel approach to it. Like, where, like, it's not my books because I'm usually with, someone. I just like the idea of going into a place where not everyone is a reader and, like, converting a few people and getting a few people back into it. And I don't know. I love my genre and I want it to. And I like, I don't know. And I love my genre and I can be critical of my genre at the same time. And I want it to be, I want to have like, and it's like, the way that like punks talk about things. I want that scene to be healthy. And like, I want to,
How do you feel the scene is right now? Do you think it's healthy?
Yeah, totally.
Good.
I mean, I think there's like, I just think if you look at the just sheer number, if it's a numbers game and you look at like the quality stuff that's out there, it's more than it ever was, I think. Like if you
Sure.
look at like what Tor's doing with those free novelettes and novellas that they're releasing, like I don't know, you didn't have that 10 years ago. Like, yeah, maybe you had a lot more, maybe you had a lot more books in supermarket spinners, and you had leisure and stuff like that. But as great as some of those books are, especially if you go back into like if you say like the mid-80s when there was like Zebra and Pinnacle and Pocket Books was doing their hardline, like there was still people love to the main theme of this podcast is that people love to whine on the internet, but like people love to whine about like, oh, self-publishing and like there's no gatekeepers anymore and look at all this crap that's the crap's flooding the market but no one's buying the real crap. Like
Right.
And it's like, and if you have a problem with someone that is sell outselling you, they're giving an audience the goods that you can't, And I don't say this as someone that sells a lot because I don't. Like I don't sell anything. Like I'm very like, I'm very like, bottom middle of the, of the cra of the pack. But like I don't harbor any animosity towards the people that have figured out how to sell their books to people. Like they're just. They're putting in the time and they're putting in the research and they're doing it, intelligently. But also there's like there's that end of the spectrum, like the self-published end, and then there's like the prestige end, which is like, Mongrel's got a, a werewolf book got a, hardcover coast to coast release. Look at the Paul Tremblay books. Look at how people have, how much Laird Barron is selling and Livia Llewellyn's like, is like is like is big in the scene and like people like the good stuff and people champion the good stuff and people like I don't know like it's look how much good stuff we have. And
No, I agree. I totally agree with you. And I think that what's, yeah, I think that I like your attitude because I do like this idea, though, that it's just you. So much time is wasted, blaming other people for misfortune, right? And so it's like you can actually go out there and do things, and it's not going to happen like immediately. It's like it would be like complaining that I don't have, fucking 23-inch arms, right? And it's like, well, it's like you could go lift if you wanted to. You're not going to have those tomorrow, but if you do it for, 5, 6 years, like maybe if you do a lot of steroids, But I don't even know if 23-inch arms is really big or not. I just made up a number.
I mean, we're not mathematicians here.
No. It's the metric. What is the anyway? What do you teach? Do you teach English?
Yeah, I teach English.
Oh, right on, right on.
I teach AP English.
Whoa.
I tell the kids every day that they're elite, and they're just like, "We're not." And I'm like, "I guess, all right. Well, you're doing better than other."
Right. So have you had a con that you've ever been to where you just didn't sell a fucking thing?
No, I've had some. I did a sci-fi convention, and I'm not gonna name the name, but everyone who's in the Philadelphia area could probably know that was across the river in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and it was like, true sci-fi, like, more insular than like a Star Trek convention. And the organizers, when I got there, were so incredibly rude to me. And like, it was so unhelpful. And it was one of those things where I was actually paying, like, I paid more than like I usually do at a con to get a table, but I was like, oh, but it's so close. I could just take the bus over. So I was like, I'm saving money on that. And I still like, I still, the thing is, like, by hook or by crook, I still like made table. But they just, it was like very clear that, like, I don't know, scenes can get so super insular, especially like when it's something that's been running for like, it's been running for like 50 years.
So they had a
And
problem with the fact that you were selling horror books or what?
I don't know what their problem was. I think it, I like, I actually think it might have been partly age, because I think a lot of the people there that had sold were like, at like middle-aged to, to slightly elderly folks. And I think I look younger than I am. And I look like a slob because I wear like jeans and like, Lucio Fulci t-shirts all the time. Like, so I look like a real, a real like scumbag, but I'm also like, I don't know. I'm in a button-down t-shirt and khakis every day, every day of the work week. Like, like, I don't know. I could turn it on when I want to. Like, I hate that idea of like, look at this peon like trying to come here and sell his books. Like, so I bristled a little of that, and I didn't do super well at that convention. But like, I've never had one, because it's also like a, it's also a lemons from lemon or lemonade from lemons thing, where like you'll see people at cons and they come around, they like take a lap, and they're just like, oh, this is real, 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 real tough crowd, real, real bad crowd. And they just want kind of like, they want validation for the fact that they're not hustling. Like, again, it's that, and I'm, I sound like a real, I don't know, I sound like a real Reagan Dem or Reagan Republican here, like being like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And that's not what I mean. But I also mean like, you are a part of this equation. It's not just foot traffic plus signage equals book sales. It's foot traffic plus signage plus you being an active person, not sitting behind your desk, tweeting the whole time about what a bad time you're having. Like,
Why, you know, man, I think I would say that I am a little bit of a bootstrap guy. Obviously not entirely, there are things that get in people's way, if you have medical bills and stuff and you can't afford to travel and you can't blah blah blah. And so I 100% understand that and respect that, but for most of the population, I remember the first AWP I went to, there was a guy on the corner who was he had a little speaker with him and he was selling rap CDs and he was like playing the beat from the
Oh,
rap
perfect.
and he was stopping people. He's like, hey, can I just get a minute? And he would play the beat and he would rap it and he was hustling these CDs. And so basically the thing is that why aren't you doing that? I mean, you can, but and then if you want to say something like, well, I have a mental illness where I can't speak to people, then it's like, okay, that's fine, but it's also like kind of like saying, I'm really pissed off that I can't climb Mount Everest because I have no legs. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I don't
I'm
know.
Not even saying that. I'm not even, I'm oh, saying, I am, and I'm I am, also, I like, I understand, like, but I understand the idea that I'm very privileged to be able to afford to go to these conventions, you know, because you could put the money up front and like you buy a table and you buy, you know, train fare, bus fare, whatever. Like, I understand that I'm working from a privileged position to do that. I'm saying once you're there and you have all the faculties to do this thing and you're choosing not to do it, that's what I'm saying is, okay, well, the fault isn't with the crowd,
right?
You know,
right?
Because I just, you know, sold 3 books to that lady over there, and she's gonna give them their grandkids. Like the fault isn't with the crowd.
Really? It's buy books and give them to their kids. Your books?
Oh, I've had things like that happen. I don't know. This sounds like bragging now, but I was just flabbergasted by it. I had a kid. This is also Rocket Shock, and this is why it's my favorite convention. But I have a kid, and he's not a kid because he's like an older gentleman, but he's a really, really nice guy. But he came with his mom, and he bought some stuff at the table, but then he takes out of his bag. He had brought stuff from home.
Cool.
And I like almost broke. I got real weepy. I get weepy over everything. I get like, I'm a real emotional guy, but I was like, This is the coolest thing that's ever happened. Like he had a well-thumbed version of Tribesman. Like, he brought it in his bag, you know, it was like the coolest thing. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's what's so cool, man, too, is that it's like, I mean, you could tell that you love this shit. You know what I mean? Like, you love horror, you love books, you know? And so it's cool to see that, you know, you're out there like trying to get people to fucking read these books. Cause I feel like I could probably do more too. You know, I do a lot of that.
Do a lot of, I mean, you're a, like, I don't know. You're wearing a lot of hats too, I think. Like, that's so true. I think, yeah. I'm not publishing anyone. I'm just got to worry about, I just got to be, you know, the selfish prick who's like,
it's one of those. Yeah, there's been a big learning curve with stuff like that. But I feel like, you know, I had my horoscope read this year, and it's all looking pretty good. So, you know, I got my, actually, this sounds dorky, but I have my horoscope taped up above my computer, because I believe in that shit. So whatever. But no, yeah, man. I mean, it's one of those things where reading is fucking cool, and I would love for more people to understand that, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it could do things that movies can't, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I hate to do the teacher thing, but I tell kids that all the time, where it's just like, you know, it's just different. Like, don't think of English class as English class. Think of it as, like, communication and art class, where we're looking at all these different things, all these different modes of communication and how they're all different, and how some are better at certain things than others. Like, and it's just like, it's okay to like a little bit of everything.
Yeah, for sure. You know? Yeah. Like, Do you think that 2016 was a good year for horror movies?
2016, the year that was.
The year that was.
Yeah, very much so. I'm like, I hate like year end lists, because I always just draw a blank, and if people ask me, I'm always like, you know, it's like 3 hours later when I'm lying in bed afterwards, everyone's like, oh, what did you like this year? And I name like two really like basic things.
Right.
And then I'm lying in bed being like, oh, I should have said this. It would have made me sound smart. But I don't know.
Many French films with.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I could do that if I had half a brain, but I like can't. But I don't know. I love this year. This year is, I love. Was The Witch this year, or was that last year?
That was,
are we counting that as this year?
That was 2016.
I loved that. Yeah, I loved that. I loved The Autopsy of Jane Doe. I loved We Are the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. And a lot of people were like, ooh, it's slow burn with no explosion. Like, and I understand that, but it's also not every movie has to have an explosion. I don't know. Something can just be beautiful and be enjoyable.
Right. Much like making love, you don't always need to explode, right? You can just.
I don't know. I'm just like.
You can just ride it out, and then. No, I'm just playing. You got to bust. You got to bust. Like, it hurts if you don't bust.
I have that on shirts.
You got to bust.
Yeah. It could be for either thing. It could be for Ghostbusting.
Yeah.
and like my, like, I don't know. I have like two favorite movies this year, and one could just be because I just saw it. Like, because I loved, I don't know, I saw it with my girlfriend's parents, and we saw La La Land, and I love that. It's just, like, so pleasant and so nice, and I loved it.
I've heard a lot about that. Yeah, I might have to check that movie out.
But I would, I don't know. I said something on Twitter about it, but I also like my other, like if I had to like pick, like if I had to do like a list, which I don't like doing, but I would be like, oh, it would be between that and Green Room.
Yeah.
But like, but how could like, how could two movies give it, do, you know, do more different things? Like it couldn't, they literally couldn't be more different.
Right, like, right, right. Well, I haven't seen La La Land, but yeah, I do like, I feel like Green Room did a lot of things that were different from just almost every other movie that I'd ever seen. You know, I was almost surprised in Green Room. No, I won't spoil the ending, but the ending actually wrapped up a lot neater than I thought it was going to, because the movie itself just like seems to twist at every, you know, every
beat. It does, but it's also very clean. Like once you put in that, once you put in that ending, it's just like, right. it's both great in that it feels new, but it's actually like if you really break it down act by act, it's not that new.
Mm-hmm.
But it just like it's just through sheer craftsmanship.
Right.
It feels like wow, I've never seen anything like that before.
Right.
And you've seen like little bits and pieces like that before all the time, but it just never in that exact way played that exact way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And it's just what a great central theme to have it be about punk music, where it's just a little 80-minute movie that's just the perfect punk song of a movie, where it's just.
That's a good way to put it. I've never heard it put that way. His next movie is going to be really sweet too. Did you hear about that one?
The thing is, I'm like a real bad film fan where I don't like, I just like generally like, I don't know. I saw that movie and I saw, you know, Blue Ruin, and it's like, it's the idea of like, I am all in for everything. So I'm just going to avoid all news items. Like I saw a headline that it's that Netflix bought it, but I don't know anything about it.
Oh,
know?
Okay.
Like,
so you don't
like, I'm just
know?
Definitely going to see it. I mean, I can know the premise and it won't spoil me, but I'm not going to like watch any trailers or anything. Cause I'm just, I know. You know, I hopefully it'll come to a theater, and hopefully I can, you know, plunk down $11 to go see it on a matinee, like, because.
I guess the basic plot is a kid gets abducted by wolves, and a guy is hunting after the kid, and then the kid's father, who's like an alcoholic, is going after the hunter. He's on his own kind of weird crusade to find the kid himself, but seems, and it's set in the Alaskan wilderness, so.
Oh yeah, I mean yeah. I'm gonna see that the second or second that I possibly can. Like it's not an option. I mean,
yeah. But it's just so cool because like I also feel like Sonier, who he's also, I mean he feels like one of us, right? Like he feels like a dude who's just a huge fan, and who understands like what makes these things work. And he was given like he's given this opportunity, and he's fucking doing it, right? Because I mean, Blue Ruin also like Blue Ruin was completely uncompromising, right? Like it never feels like they, you know, fudged anything in that movie. Like when it needed to be slow and procedural, it was that. And then when it was brutal, like one of my favorite scenes I think in recent movie history is in Blue Ruin when he gets shot in the leg with the arrow, and he's gonna do like the surgery on himself to get it out, but he ends up like passing out because it hurts too much, and he just goes to the hospital.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that idea of like what you mentioned of like he feels like us, but I think there are plenty of filmmakers that kind of and plenty of like productions that flaunt that idea of like for us, by us kind of mentality.
FUBU.
FUBU. Like, but it's also it's another piece of alchemy because it's not getting blinded by what you love and blindly replicating what you love.
That's
it's
so
the
smart.
Idea of understanding beats and being able to like subvert them, because I think some of the worst horror movies in recent memory have been pure, like have like even run like their ad campaign on the fact that like we're bringing back the real horror shit, like get yourselves ready, like, and they just feel like the
What's
worst
up,
straight to
booters?
Video piece of crap, like, like, and I think that's the idea, is like you can love something unconditionally, and I love the genre unconditionally, and it's clear that, you know, Sonier loves his genres, plural, because he mixes them.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear that he loves them, but he also understands, you know, I don't know, he's like a gambler. He knows when to hold them, he knows when to fold them. Like, it's the idea of, like, knowing when to embrace genre tropes and knowing when to say, no thanks, we'll do something from this genre, we'll do something from the crime genre in this horror movie instead of, you know, the other way around. And I don't know, I think that's what makes it, I've never made a movie, so I can't really say, but I think that's what makes a good filmmaker for me, from my little, you know, armchair, like, oh, I got a film major, like I wrote a couple papers.
No, like, dude, I think I really like that you said that too, because I do think that the whole "this is for the fans" can also be tied into, you know, just the abundance of, I mean, it feels like just beating a sad, tired old drum at this point, yeah. But you know, the abundance of franchise shit, you know, it's like, this is a thing that you remember, you know?
Yeah. Or the things that run on pure, like, or like, if this is purely original, yeah. Here's our Patreon page, or not our Patreon page, but here's our Kickstarter page. This is something purely original that will remind you of all the things you grew up on.
Right.
So you should give us $200 sight unseen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's in some ways that's more insidious than, you know, a straight sequel or a remake, because a sequel or a remake is literally a dude who's taken so many meetings at Hollywood, be given a job and mm-hmm. given a chance, and he's just like, I should probably make this pretty good. Like,
yeah, no kid. Yeah, yeah, no,
you know, I mean, like sometimes that happens, and sometimes those are great. Like,
yeah, it is, yeah, it's hard to say which ones would be good and which ones would be bad, but there is kind of a feeling now that a lot of movies coming out are like, remember when you were like a kid? I remember I would have like Star Wars toys and G.I. Joes and cars and stuff, and I would just like mash them together in midair. I'd be like, they're fucking fighting and this is rad. And now it's kind of like that. It's like, what if the alien from Aliens was fighting the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? Like, that's like what a lot of fan art is too, you know. Since I'm apparently taking big shits on people, but you know, it's like, oh, it's like the alien from Aliens, but you know, he's in Ghostbusters, and yeah. It's like people's deviant arts and shit like that. And
yeah, and know, and to a certain extent, I can, like, I mean, I listened to that that interview you did with Cody Goodfellow, and I mean, I love Cody Goodfellow's work, mm-hmm. but I also, like, the idea that you guys were talking about is like, every day is Comic-Con now, mm-hmm. I think is a really good idea, but uh-huh. I can be a man of conflicting taste, I freaking love the Marvel movies, and I'm there like every day. So when you guys were talking about Marvel movies, I don't know, because you're both intelligent people I respect, I kind of like, I definitely saw what you were saying, mm-hmm. but it's also like, I love my hamburger, right, and I like it when my hamburger has Captain America in it. You know, like
right. Yeah, no, I totally. And I mean, like, I have this conversation a lot with Kazepis, you know, because he's a huge, like, Marvel fan. I mean, and DC too. I mean, he watches the shows on the CW and shit. So yeah, I mean, I think that it's just, I mean, it's a soap opera. I was about to say a soap opera for boys, but I mean, that whole shit is,
oh yeah, I mean, it's broken through that gender barrier, I feel like, which is great.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic too. But you know, I mean, it's a soap opera basically. So I mean, if you like following that story, I mean, that's totally cool. I think it's just the barrier to me with comic books was always this feeling of like, I have no idea what's going on, like, you know, not being able to kind of get into it. And I the way my brain works, I don't have encyclopedic knowledge of stuff.
Yeah.
I've never been good. You know, I'll finish a book and I'll be talking about it with somebody and they'll say, and I really liked when that character showed up and did this, and I will completely have forgotten what, like, I very much like move on to the, I don't remember shit that happened in my books, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that a lot of people who I know who are super good, like Kazepis is one, another friend of mine, back in Oklahoma, one of the smartest people I know, but he has that kind of, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of comic books, and he can remember all these characters and all their interactions with each other. Yeah. And it's just never been my thing, right?
I'm like halfway, because I like still like comic books, and I think the idea that like a floppy doesn't tell a complete story anymore is both a good and a bad thing. But the idea, like, I love Batman, and I love Batman since I was a little kid. But also in college, like, I'd taken a couple years off, and I picked up, you know, I picked up a bunch of those Grant Morrison Batman when he was doing the, you know, him killed up. Yeah, they're cool, but I literally didn't understand anything that happened in them.
Well, I mean, that's also, because it relies on,
like, you have to, like, have the Wikipedia page open. You, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to literally be reading it, and it's like, here's what Batmite is, and, like.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, also, you know what I mean? With, like, no, yeah. Totally, but with, I mean, Grant Morrison in general, you know, he came out with, I went to Powell's and I picked up Nameless, which is this kind of Lovecraftian horror miniseries that he did. And his style now is just one that every time you turn the page, you're in a different parallel universe and you're being thrust into the middle of an ongoing story. His style has developed in such a way too. I mean, like, that might have been as much a symptom of Grant Morrison writing those books as it was of, you know. But I mean, You're right also, because Morrison is one of those characters who does have fucking, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of DC universe.
And I think it's probably a little bit of for column A and column B as why I was like completely perplexed by those books. Like,
I did like Bat-Cow.
In a good way, because I kept getting them. Like,
there was Bat-Cow in Batman and Robin, which I thought was funny. I just liked that. I mean, I like Morrison is probably one of my favorite writers, just for the simple fact that there is that feeling of anything can happen on the, like, on the next page, basically, right?
Yeah.
And he plays by zero rules. And, I mean, I don't think if everything was like that, obviously, like, it would get kind of tiresome. But he has a nice niche that he's carved out for himself. And you kind of know what you're going to get. So I like that about him.
Let me ask you, have you read those? I mean, because he's the editor of Heavy Metal now, right?
Yes.
Have you picked those up? Have you read those?
It's funny you ask, because I just bought a subscription.
Okay. Because like, I haven't. Ago. I mean, it's been like a year now. He's been an editor, and I haven't gotten like one issue, and I feel a little bad about it. Like, because I know it'll probably, it's up the quality. I bet.
I'll be able to tell you here in about a week or so when I get the first issue that I'm getting is that one with the Savage Sword of Jesus Christ. That's the first one I'm getting.
Oh, I heard you talking about that, and I didn't even know what it was. Like, I'm too lazy to Google. So
it's like Conan the Barbarian, but if it was Jesus instead.
I take.
And he's done a lot of stuff with Nazi alternative history. Like, his first comic book ever was the Adventures of Young Hitler, right? And so he basically has taken this idea of Jesus, which is what like the Nazis tried to make Jesus out to be, was this Aryan strongman, right, who ruled very much by the sword, not by peace. And so he just took that literally, and he's writing a book about it. So, seems cool.
I'd read that. He seems like a smart guy.
Yeah. He lives in a fucking castle, and he just does whatever he wants.
Yeah.
It's the life, man. I remember I'm such a fanboy. I actually went when they had Morrison Con in Las Vegas.
Really?
And I have a Invisibles tattoo on my right arm, so I'm in whole hog.
You're in it to win it. Dude. I mean, I just think like it would be a funny sitcom if you had him and Alan Moore move in together. Like,
dude, that would be the funniest thing ever. Yeah, if we could, well, because they fucked with each other a lot during the oddies, and I think like the late 90s, they kind of went back and forth. They were a little snippy. I don't know if they're totally cool with each other.
They both seem like they could have the capacity to be snippy people, and I mean Moore especially, but just says stuff to like make headlines.
Right. Yeah. I think it was more Morrison was the kind of antagonist in that. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Alan Moore was just kind of like, everything sucks and I don't like it, you know? And then Morrison was just like, you know, poking him because he saw a target, and he's a, you know, he's just that kind of person, I think. Like, I know him, right? Like, he's my buddy.
You know him better than most of us. You got the tattoo to prove it. Like,
yeah. When I did meet him, I did the fanboy gush. It's one of my regrets in life that I talked for 5 minutes straight, and I think he got maybe five or six words in edgewise. And it's one of those things where you think back on it, and it's just kind of embarrassing, right?
You can't beat yourself up over those things. I've done that. Like, I feel like I've done that plenty because
Who have you gushed over?
When I was 15 or 16, I've subsequently met him at more cons, but I met, George Romero. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's so embarrassing. My mom took a picture of me and my high school friend next to him, and I can't even look at that picture. Cause I'm just like, I was such a goofus that day. But I think he was endeared by the fact that when I immediately like thought of it, like the high school me was like, oh God, you're such a loser. Like, and then I think back on it now and I'm like, he was probably pretty happy to like have a break between middle-aged dudes, like have a kid just like love it up on him. Like probably, I don't know, maybe that's the way I justify it to myself now.
Well, this was probably pre zombie revival too. So he probably,
It's what's funny. It was like 2 weeks out from Land of the Dead.
Cool.
And it didn't set the world on fire, and I loved it, and I'll still go to the mat for Land of the Dead, especially in retrospect with Diary of the Dead and Survival, which Survival's not the worst thing in the world, but Diary is pretty damn close.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll still go to the mat for Land of the Dead. And I just remember, like, I didn't talk to him about anything other than Land of the Dead, and I got him to sign a DVD of Season of the Witch, which I hadn't even seen at that point. It was just the only thing on the table I didn't have.
Right, right. No, yeah, I think Land. Well, I mean, I like anything with Ozzy Argento in it.
Oh,
So I think that's originally why
I
I went to
literally
go.
forgot.
Yeah, that's why I went to go watch that movie, and then it was interesting, man. You know, it was really. He likes those allegories, doesn't he?
Yeah, he likes those real on the nose allegories. But it's also, if you put it next to, if you make that like a soft trilogy, if you make Land Survival or Land Diary and Survival a trilogy, it's the one that is clearly saying, clearly articulating the most understandable thing. I don't know.
What
I like,
would you?
and it's got Dennis Hopper. I don't know. It's pretty cool.
Right. You know, it's a cool movie. Yeah, and you know, I don't know. I've never felt like I was. You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I used to be really into like film criticism and stuff. And I would go to movie. I would go to every movie that came out, and I was very. My grandmother was talking to me about this while I was visiting her a few months ago. She was like, "You used to go to every movie and you hated all of them." And I didn't understand why you kept going. But, you know, I would go, and I would go with, like, you know, my dad. And my dad was always, every movie we came out with or we walked out of, he was like, "It was okay." And I was like, "What do you mean it was okay? That was total shit." And then you know, my mom loves everything that she sees, you know? And
Yeah.
I didn't get that either. But now I don't really, there aren't very many movies that I walk out of hating anymore. I'm like, I mean, they're like my dad, and you know, that was okay. Or I'm like my mom, and I say that was the greatest thing ever, even though, you know, obviously everything can't be the greatest thing ever. But I don't know, man. I just like stuff. I like liking stuff now.
It's a sign of just getting older, maturing. Because I think in high school I was the same way, where I was just like, I wanted to, like, especially if you were like in the high school when like the internet was becoming a thing. Like you'd go on Chud and like you'd like read the comments and everyone's hating on everything, and you think that that's the cool thing that older kids do. And maybe you weren't influenced by this, but like I feel like with myself, like I feel like there were some times in high school and maybe even early college that I was super dismissive of things, and like I just think. It's so much less of a waste of energy.
Right.
It's like, you know, it takes less muscles than it does to smile, than it does to frown. Like, and it's such a
Right.
cliche, but it's kind of true. Like, also don't waste your time with stuff you don't like. Like, I will close books, I will turn off TVs because I'm like, I am a grown man who
Right.
dedicates his free time to like a second job. So like, I don't have time to dislike things. So if this seems like something I'm gonna dislike, you know, within I give it like, you know, I give it a half hour,
Right.
like why wouldn't I watch, you know, why wouldn't I use that extra hour to watch something I like or I'm gonna have a better chance of liking?
Did you ever go to Ain't It Cool News?
That's the thing. I guess it was also really tribal then too, because I was like, you know, I was more of a Chud person,
Right,
like,
okay.
and now I'll look at Ain't It Cool News, but it was just back then it was like, oh,
I
this is the
remember,
one thing that's in my favorites, like.
yeah, it was like peak Ain't It Cool News for me was when Blade 2 came out. And of course, you know, the fan community with that was really kind of brutal with Harry Knowles about the fact that he was friends with Guillermo del Toro and he was getting set visits. And then he wrote this big long Blade 2 review that was compared Blade 2 to eating pussy. And he was describing cunnilingus in pretty, if I remember correctly, graphic detail. And that kind of just became this. It's really weird to like, that's the point, I think, where that site turned from like a really kind of interesting cult sort of website to almost entirely, it seemed like, a community of haters. And so you'd go to the comments on Ain't It Cool News, which I think is what they were lampooning in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh, when he goes and fights them all?
Right. But yeah, it's nothing but bile. And it's just, whoever those
Yeah.
people are, it's kind of just like, wow.
How do you have the energy for this?
Yeah,
Like, how
what
do you
is
have the
your life
time?
like? Why
Like,
do you hate so much
how do you
shit?
watch, how do you work in all these movies and hate all these movies at the same time? It doesn't seem physically possible. Like,
Right. And it.
whatever, you know, caffeine pills you're taking, I want some. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no shit. And it doesn't seem to make. Like, we talked about this briefly, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be a real purpose to even arguing on the internet. So one person on the internet saying, "I hated this," and then another person saying, "You're fucking stupid, I love this." And it's just, it's mind-boggling. It's like, wow, what a fucking waste of time that is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad I see movies pretty close to their release. Like,
right.
Because, like, I don't want to be, like, even spoiled by people's, like thumbs up, thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if it's something I'm going to see anyway. Like the perfect example is Blair Witch, which so many people hated.
Right.
And I saw at like the night before kind of screening, and I was just so happy. I liked it so much. Like, I don't know. And I'm afraid to like watch it now that I've seen all my friends just demolish it and hate it. Cause I was like, I don't know, whatever mix of like endorphins and like fond memories I have for the first two, like, and just fond memories of being a kid and like the fact that I like, you know, You're Next and like all these different things where it like tricked my brain into being like, the thing is, I legitimately liked it. So I bet I bet if I watch it again, I'd still probably pretty much like it. Like,
right. Dude, oh man, I remember when, when Blair Witch came out, like the original, that was so fucking, when the ending of that, where he's in the corner, it's just, I remember being fucking chilled when that came out. Just, I was like, fuck. I remember really being disturbed by Saw when it came out too. Those are both that had really great, like, I think those are the first two movies that I can think of that had fucking really good internet marketing campaigns.
Well, Saw was a little later, so I feel like I was fully in it for Saw, but I feel like I had liked horror movies before Blair Witch. But my dad's also like a total Luddite. We didn't have internet in the house then. Mm. And like kind of like you, I'd go to movies with my dad, and we went to Blair Witch opening day, like Friday in afternoon. And my dad like is such, you know, such a great guy and like, but so also kind of gullible, where like he had thought it was real. Mm. And in turn, since I was like a child, what was it, 95?
When did the Blair Witch Project come out? Yeah, it was something like that.
I was somewhere between the ages of 7 and 10. So like you have a child in the theater, in a pretty much empty theater because it's a matinee crowd.
Right.
And like I was terrified, and it's like such an integral part of like my, like, you know, origin story of being a horror fan, and like all horror fans have that. You were just talking to Eli about like the Boogans. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, in retrospect, the Boogans isn't anyone's idea of great horror cinema. It's like, you know, it's a great movie that I love, but it's not like I can objectively look at it and be like, you know, this is not as good as Alien, you know.
Right.
But the idea that is that Blair Witch for me, and I still watch it, I watched it right before the new one came out. And I wrote like a script that's found footage, and then I wrote a book that's like pseudo, like found document. Mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. I watched it like right around when I was doing those things, cause like kind of to study it. And I'm like I literally like I'm like after it was over, I'm like, this is a perfect movie. Like this is like one of the most perfect movies. Like I can't look at it objectively. I know I can't.
Why would you want to?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there's so much that goes into liking or dislike. And dude, it's such a fucking just like beautiful thing when you really love something, where you're just like, fuck, that was good, you know? And so I don't know. I think it's a, you know, but I also think that there's something to be said. Like, there's also something kind of beautiful about really hating a movie too, you know? You just go out and you're just like, You're not lukewarm about it. You're not like, that kind of sucked or that was kind of good. But like the two extremes where, you know, that was the best fucking shit I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, I want to punch something because that was so fucking bad. You know what I mean? So anyway, art is beautiful. God is love.
The bad movie thing also fits into the same reason I like good movies, because they're kind of like puzzles of like, how did they do that? And when something is so tone deaf, as to almost be offensive to good taste, like you kind of just, you do that post-mortem in your brain, and that's what makes you hate it so much. It's not that the thing is that bad, it's that you're trying to figure out, how could this be as bad as it is? And you're like, you know, you're like the rat with like the cheese in the puzzle box, and you're trying to like just scratch at it, like it's making you furious of like, why is this so bad? Like,
and then somebody pops up and they're like, I thought that was pretty good. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with you, dude? Yeah. But anyhow, sir, that is over an hour.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. We're way over. Yeah.
So I appreciate your time very much. Thank you for coming on, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. And it was nice talking to you, buddy.